The Russian national anthem, played as Vladimir Putin was inaugurated as president this week. We heard the applause in the hall, but Putin's motorcade to the ceremony drove through what one Russian writer called a ghost town, because police had cleared Moscow streets out of fear of more protests. Protests with the whiff of a Russian spring not only dogged Putin, they surprised Russia experts, who were expecting him to waltz back into office. It's the latest in a long line of surprising turns in recent Russian and Eastern European history. But our next guest says events like these only seem surprising because we're listening to the experts. He says to understand events in Russia and neighboring countries like Ukraine and Georgia, you must read the great Russian writers. Thomas DeWall is author of The Caucasus, An Introduction. He joins us from the Carnegie Endowment Studios in Washington. And Tom, you match three countries with three works of literature, so let's do that. Start with Nikolai Gogol's play, The Government Inspector. Why don't you give us the thumbnail and then tell us what we should read into that?
It's a tale of a small Russian unnamed provincial town and a very corrupt mayor. So nothing new there. And nothing works. There are geese nesting in the courtroom. Everyone is on the take. And then suddenly they hear a rumor that a government inspector has arrived from the capital. Everyone is, of course, terrified. The whole town is turned upside down. And then they make their mistake. They mistake for the government inspector this young man staying at the inn. He realizes quickly that this is a case of mistaken identity, and he exploits them, just has a wonderful time eating the mayor's meals, seducing his daughter, everyone giving him little gifts, and then when he fears he's about to be rumbled, he skips town. Everyone's in consternation because they suddenly realize they've been duped, and at the end of the play, announcement is made that the real government inspector has arrived, and there's this famous dumb scene in which everyone is completely dumbstruck.
So when he says at the end of the play, the mayor turns and says to everyone else on stage, what are you laughing at? You are laughing at yourself. Is that Gogol speaking directly to the audience?
It is. I think he's speaking to the whole of Russia, and I think it's a critique of the whole of Russia. You could call the system authoritarianism by consent, and that's basically what Putin's Russia is as well. It doesn't work unless everyone decides to go along with the system and not to rock the boat.
You write about another connection between the two. You say, you know, the inspector's a fraud, right? It's this young guy running around fooling everybody. And so the president in Russia might be.
Yeah, I think Gogol's put his finger on something which a lot of political scientists haven't, which is that the system is very brittle. It's reliant on one man, on personalized power. It can crumble very quickly, and that's what we saw with the Soviet Union in 1991, and we've seen it on a smaller scale suddenly with the seemingly invincible Vladimir Putin challenge this year. And I think we see that in the famous dumb scene at the end of Gogol's play, that suddenly this great vertically erected system can fall apart and you have almost instant chaos before someone comes along and reconstitutes it.
So that is the work of literature that you compare to Putin's Russia. Then you move on to Anton Chekhov's play, The Cherry Orchard, and you say this can help explain modern-day Ukraine. So again, a thumbnail of The Cherry Orchard, perhaps people more familiar with this, and then Ukraine.
Well, Chekhov is, you could call, the master of the mundane. He's a kind of poet of everyday life. You know, there are no dramatic tragedies in his stories. The Cherry Orchard is all about this estate in present-day eastern Ukraine with a famous cherry orchard, and the rather feckless lady landowner can't really afford to keep it up. She's come back from Paris and deciding what to do with it. It's the beginning of the 20th century. The servants are no longer so subservient. There's a new player in town who's a businessman who used to be a serf. So the economic order is changing. There's a whole wonderful cast of characters. At the end, the estate is sold, the cherry orchard is chopped down, and everyone disperses. The genius of the play is that it's really how you look at it. It could be a tragedy if you see the passing of the old order. It could be a celebration of the new order of economic justice, or it could be a bit of both. You see it through a spectrum of different characters, which I think is why it's still a compelling play to watch. Why Ukraine? Because Chekhov's famous for everyone talking past each other, no one agreeing, the conversation goes on. We, the audience, see everyone missing the point. The people with the money aren't very good at expressing themselves. The people that are expressing themselves don't have any money. And it's all a bit of a comedy. It's not tragic. And you look at Ukraine, it's a country of 45 million people, in terms of land area, the largest European country, and yet it's a country which is completely misses its potential, where people don't really push together. The people with the money, again, don't have the ideas. The people with the ideas don't have the money. It kind of stumbles on. It's a bit of a disappointment, but it's not a tragedy.
You quote others saying it's lost in transition. It was supposed to be a sort of dynamic bridge between Europe and Russia.
So it's a kind of gray zone in between. It's neither Europe nor Russia.
You know, we did watch the Orange Revolution there, and we saw this very exciting woman emerge, the woman with the braid around her head.
Who's now in jail.
Who's been jailed. So there's drama.
There's drama in Chekhov, too, but it's drama without resolution. The Orange Revolution brought a lot of drama, and then who happens to be president now, but the guy who lost the Orange Revolution. So everything changes and nothing changes, which I'm afraid is the story of Ukraine.
Then you bring us to perhaps the most dramatic comparison, the great Dostoevsky novel, The Brothers Karamazov, written in the 19th century, considered one of the greatest novels ever written, and you say it helps us understand present-day Georgia.
Georgia is the opposite of Ukraine. It's a country that proceeds through drama, through confrontation, a very theatrical, dramatic people, which is why it's fun to be there, but sometimes its politics veers into disaster. The Brothers Karamazov is a novel about patricide. It's about killing the father, and this is really what Georgia confronted as the Soviet Union broke up. It slew the Russian father, and it also slew the memory of the Russian-Georgian-Soviet parent, Stalin. Since 2004, we've had the youngest government in Europe.
And they're 20 and 30-somethings. I mean, it is young.
Exactly. And you meet these people, and they're bright-eyed, full of passionate ideas. Reformers, but they're not really Democrats. They're so possessed by their ideas, they don't really want to discuss them. They know that they're right, and they're going to push them through. And the old generation can go hang if they don't agree. So it's all about reform, with capital R, rather than democracy. These were Dostoevskian radical revolutionaries trying to build a utopia and cutting corners in the process. Ivan Karamazov, who's not yet 30 and has already come up with this utopian theory for the future, really could be transplanted into the current day Georgian government.
There you have it. Three great works, three countries, three ways of looking at Russia and two countries that have split off through literature. Do you think this is unique to Russian literature?
In Russia, more than pretty much any other society I can think of, literature has a kind of social role. There's this group of people in society who think deeply about the world, who are great writers, but they're not really connected to the political life of the country, and that makes them more free, it makes them think harder, and it gives them this very important role. And even 19th century England or the US would have had, you know, an active press, active political class, and in Russia you've got more of these kind of isolated figures. Tolstoy or Dostoevsky were giants within the society, and you go back to them and you see very deep insights into Russian society and Russian development as well.
That's Thomas Duval at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's with the Russia and Eurasia program. His latest book is The Caucasus, an Introduction, and we'll also link you to his article on viewing countries through Russian literature. Tom, thanks so much.
Great to talk to you.